This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. With me is a brand new book and its author, Francisco Aragon. And here he is with a poem.
Welcome. The first piece that I want to share with you captures what in hindsight was a very critical moment for me as a budding writer. It's titled Ernesto Cardenal in Berkeley, and it narrates the narrator's little act of rebellion when he decides to play hooky for the sake of his art. It also speculates about how the narrator's life may have unfolded differently had his parents decided not to migrate to San Francisco and instead remain in Nicaragua. And the last thing I'll say is that there's a reference to a Francisco Hernández de Córdoba, and he was the Spanish explorer who purportedly discovered Nicaragua. Ernesto Cardenal in Berkeley, 1982. The books in my backpack felt lighter walking down the stairs at 24th and Mission. The sky was clear and I wasn't heading for school. Above, at the station's mouth, a preacher wove Spanish, while beyond him, on the ground, a whiskered man snored through the morning, his trousers soiled. A thought flickered, swayed Rubén Darío in Madrid, as I rode east along the floor of the bay. Commuters dozed, later did crosswords going home, more of them boarding at Embarcadero, Montgomery, Powell. After the reading, I was a notebook filled, mamá y papá juntos, a different life billowing inside me. A dusty street in Granada or León playing baseball, or picturing in class how Francisco Hernández de Córdoba is led across the plaza he himself had traced out with his sword, beheaded.
That is the voice of Francisco Aragon. And this is a very significant book. And I would like you to tell us who Rubén Darío was.
In the history of Spanish letters, where poetry is concerned, Rubén Darío is considered the godfather of a movement in Spanish called Modernismo, not to be confused with English language modernism, which is something else. The equivalent might be symbolist poetry. Rubén Darío died in 1916 at the age of, in his late 40s. He was born in the mid-1800s, well, late 1800s, and he was very much influenced by the French symbolists, Rimbaud, Verlaine, and so his work really influenced and renovated Spanish poetry in the Spanish language. And he's considered, I mean, people in the Spanish-speaking world revere him as one of the godfathers of Spanish poetry in the latter half of the 19th, early part of the 20th century.
I think he's becoming more known now for some reason, and perhaps you're going to assist that, but he was at the intersection of classicism and modernism and can be compared to Baudelaire for the classicist and for what he did. He was really a risk taker, and I think that he did many things that I see being done in your book. So tell me how he influenced your life and this book.
Well, I think what I want to do, Grace, which I think will answer that question, because one of the things about this book is that I include a 4,000-word essay called My Rubén. And the first paragraph of that essay vividly answers your question. And I'd like to share that with your readers. It's called My Rubén, Notes on a Trajectory, a Controversy. 1. La princesa está triste. ¿Qué tendrá la princesa? los suspiros se escapan de su boca de fresa. Tell me the one about the princess, I'd say, and she'd readily utter these two lines. Except for a sea of aqua blue encyclopedias, ours wasn't a household replete with books. And yet, during my childhood, this arrangement of words about a sad princess sighing through strawberry lips would float free from my mother's own lips, standing at the ironing board, on the couch watching a telenovela, seated at the kitchen table removing tiny pebbles from a pile of uncooked pinto beans. Nothing kept her from retrieving this poem, one she had to learn in the early 40s as a schoolgirl in Nicaragua, though she never went beyond the sixth grade. You might say, then, that my mother's favorite Rubén Darío poem had become part of her DNA, her breath, something she passed on to me.
We have to say that this is entitled after Rubén, poems and prose, and that prose piece at the end is exquisite. It is. I find this to be a very significant book because of the way that you refer to other Spanish poets. So mention some of those people who are found within these lines.
One of the things I try to express, and there's one poem in particular where I refer to the Peruvian-born poet Cesar Vallejo, I refer to the Mexican poet Amado Nervo, and one of the things they all held in common, including Rubén Darío, these were poets who were born in Latin America, but spent significant parts of their adult lives in Europe. And because I lived in Spain for 10 years, and I'm from the Americas, I sort of conceptualized myself as being part of that tradition of poets who are originally from the Americas, South and North and Central, but who spent formative years in the old world, if you will. And that's what I like to conceptualize. I think that's what I think distinguishes me from perhaps those of my peers who have not spent significant time abroad. And so I share that Rubén Darío, though he was born in Nicaragua and died in Nicaragua, he spent the better part of his adult life traveling. He spent time in Argentina, he spent time in Paris, he spent time in Madrid, and then he went home to die in 1916.
You are continuing a very important tradition, a vibrant tradition, and something you're restoring, actually, to American audiences that has not been done before, I think. Let us hear another poem, Francisco Aragon.
I'm going to share, since I'm talking about one of the other projects of this book, is that I am rendering into English 10 Rubén Darío poems, but taking liberties. And I'd like to share an original Rubén Darío sonnet, which its original title is Walt Whitman. And I title my version simply Walt. But I want to share with you the Spanish so you can hear what he sounds like. And then I'll give you my riff. And I'll even reveal a little secret that I haven't shared in public on how I take certain liberties. Here's Rubén Darío in Spanish. A sonnet dedicated to Walt Whitman. En su país de hierro vive el gran viejo, bello como un patriarca, sereno y santo. Tiene en la arruga olímpica de su entrecejo algo que impera y vence con noble encanto. Su alma del infinito parece espejo. Son sus cansados hombros dignos del manto, y con arpa labrada de un roble añejo, como un profeta nuevo, canta su canto. Sacerdote que alimenta soplo divino, anuncia en el futuro tiempo mejor. Dice al águila, vuela, boga al marino, y trabaja al robusto trabajador. Así va ese poeta por su camino, con su soberbio rostro de emperador. And my version, one of the things about these poems in English is they're not in the traditional sense translations. I designate them as after Rubén Darío's Walt Whitman, for example. So they're after poems. They couldn't exist without the original, mm-hmm. but I take certain liberties. And here's mine. And I title my piece simply Walt. Mm-hmm. His country of iron, where he lives, an older man, fatherly, strong, wholesome, calm. His appearance impressive, the furrow of his brow persuades and charms, no end to his soul that mimics a mirror, mm-hmm. the tired curve of his shoulders draped with a cloak. And with his harp, carved from oak, he sings his song like a prophet. He's a priest fueling a wind that promises and promises. Fly, he says to an eagle, to a seaman, row, while a chiseled, robust worker hears, put your shoulder to the wheel. This is the path our poet takes. Magnificent face. And my little liberty, in the original Spanish, he says, trabajador, meaning worker, you know, do your thing, worker. And I do, while a chiseled, robust worker hears, put your shoulder to the wheel. And that's a very subtle allusion to Allen Ginsberg. When Allen Ginsberg says, I'm putting my queer shoulder to the wheel.
There are many decodified messages in your poems. You do put little clues in there that only the scholars and biographers will probably unearth, Francisco. And you also dedicate poems to Rilke, Akhmatova, and all of these people are in your DNA, aren't they?
Well, I think in this book, more than others, I do take a lot of inspiration from texts. And so one of the things that has interested me in recent years is those works of art that are inspired by other works of art, whether they be visual or a text. And so there are a number of poems that are inspired by other works of art, other works of literature.
Well, we have to tell everyone who you are. You are a San Francisco native and the son of Nicaraguan immigrants. You have been in Spain for 10 years and have degrees from UC Davis at the University of Notre Dame, and you joined the faculty of the University of Notre Dame, the Institute for Latino Studies, and you have established your own niche in that university. I think you've been teaching there recently, right?
Well, my current situation is I teach there in the fall in person, and then in the spring I teach from DC, but beginning next year, I'll be teaching both semesters on campus.
And we have to tell about your books. You were a Canto Mundo Fellow and a member of the Macondo Writers Workshop, the author of Puerto del Sol, Glow of Our Sweat, as well as editor of The Wind Shifts, New Latino Poetry. And you are working in DC and Notre Dame on the campus. And this is a groundbreaking book. It brings together the sensibility of the Spanish authors, but more than that, it brings your portrait as bringing forth that tradition in contemporary terms, in colloquial terms, honoring the greatest among them. And that is exemplified with Rubén Darío, who I think was a great risk taker, a great innovator. I don't see in your book some of the line lengths that he did, which were so unusual. I think he introduced a very long line with dashes, things that were not done in Spanish poetry before. So he was really doing something, and you're continuing that tradition. So give us some more poetry. The book is after Rubén.
I'm going to share a poem, perhaps the poem that's getting the most attention in this book. You may recall that the epigraph to my essay was Notes on a Trajectory, a Controversy. Well, here's the controversy. Here's the head note to this poem. In November of 2012, Arizona State University issued a press release announcing the acquisition of a privately held collection of manuscripts created by Nicaraguan poet Rubén Darío. The collection consists of 900 or so handwritten pages of poetry, essays, stories, and personal letters, nine of which revealed for the first time an intimate relationship between Darío and Mexican poet Amado Nervo. Shortly after ASU made its announcement, the Nicaraguan novelist Sergio Ramírez published an article in which he denounced the letters as fake. January 21st, 2013. Dear Sergio, your depiction in Margarita, How Beautiful the Sea, of my homecoming to León in 1907, once again filled my arms with bouquets that dampened my silk suit, baskets of flowers and fruit, which I accepted with a nod, though leaving them in the hands of my entourage, a cambric handkerchief wiping the sweat dripping down my face and neck. And as I opened a path for myself, village folk pressing around, their lips at my sleeves, a little boy with curly hair led the way, clutching the flag of Nicaragua. I loved how you had Momotombo years later in 1916 blow moments after I drew my last breath. The volcano producing a deep rumbling, sending people into the streets, a spatter of sparks lighting the sky. I wasn't aware, of course, of what came next, your novel placing me there in that room. The doctor's scalpel blinking like a star in the moment it traced the incision on my forehead, my scalp folded back, the saw's fine teeth biting into cranium, he feverishly snipping ligaments, holding in his hands, my brain seconds later proclaiming, here it is, the private vessel of the muses. More than cringe, I blushed at being handled with such care. Perhaps you're surprised by this letter? You shouldn't be. Anything is possible in this racket of ours, but artful is not how I'd describe that piece you penned last November. You see, those letters to Amado were real. I bargained with myself, rewrote them to preserve them, precisely because I knew what would happen. You know as well as I. He would have destroyed them after reading them. What will people say? He, with wife and children, held sway. I was in New York shortly after New Year's in 1915, heading home when I wrote to him one more time. But you were right, and I'm mildly embarrassed to admit it. I told a little lie on those sheaves of Hotel Astor stationery in Times Square. The poem I enclosed wasn't composed in Barcelona expressly for him. It was a piece of juvenilia, I know, but one I had a soft spot for, and which I retitled and dedicated to him. It was a running joke between us, sending each other our fluff. And yet it's ironic, Sergio. Thank you for being complicit, for hinting at my understory. How did you manage to nail those final hours? I was indeed lying curled up on my side, wrapped in a thick gray blanket, snoring lightly, my mouth slightly open as my fingers gripped that silver crucifix that Amado, yes, Amado Nervo, had given to me in Paris when we shared that apartment in Montmartre, and that I always carried with me. I'd like to think that somehow you knew and know this truth. I'm waiting for the day when you, the world, stop fighting it. I am dead, and the dead are very patient. Love, Ruben.
A little known letter, never heard before. Nervo, his lover. This is something which you say is a conflict because, first of all, it unfolds the secret love affair. But at the other hand, scholars all wanted to sully it by saying...
Some did.
Yeah. But it is really a revelation and so beautiful, so beautiful. Who was this Nervo?
He was a contemporary, a Mexican, very well-known Mexican poet who spent quite a bit of time in Europe. Curiously enough, and I mentioned this in the essay, when I lived in Spain for 10 years, my literary friends had mentioned to me that it was sort of known about Amado Nervo being gay. Nothing was said. Ruben Dario, that was not something that was known. And so in some regards, it wasn't surprising, the Amado Nervo part of the equation, but the Ruben Dario part of the equation, as I talk about in my essay,
yes,
was quite a revelation.
It's a good book. It's a good book. It has so much beauty in it. How did your life change in putting it together?
This book has been in the works for quite some time. And I would say that this is the book in which I perhaps most address the Nicaraguan side of my background. And of course, these Ruben Dario letters that were discovered in 2012 also influenced me in a sense that it made me want to be more intentional about pushing back against any efforts to silence our LGBTQ voices. So in that sense, it made me less reticent and perhaps more unapologetic in claiming and identifying as part of the queer community.
Let us hear another poem, Francisco Aragon, who has given a book that is going to last longer than we do.
I'm going to read to you what's often the companion piece to the poem I just read, and that is that Ruben Dario wrote a sonnet called De Invierno, which I title as Winter Hours. Once I learned about this new biographical information about him based on these letters, I decided to take more liberties with my English version of an original sonnet. In the original Spanish, the beloved is a Carolina. But after these letters, this is what the sonnet now looks like in English. Winter Hours. Look at him, curled in a large plush chair, wrapped in sable fur, fireplace glowing just beyond, the angora nosing the fabric of his shirt, a porcelain vase beside the folding screen, draped with silk, his eyes subtle filters allowing sleep to seep through. He enters in silence, takes off his gray coat, pecks the slender rose of his face, a fleur de lis. Amado wakes, smiles, snow, general over Paris. after Rubén Darío's De Invierno.
Gorgeous. That is the only word for it, is gorgeous. Talking about how you are influenced by him, he has a very famous poem about the wolf, the story about the wolf, and you actually adapt it into your own language. I don't know if we have time, if you wish to read it or not, but I think it's very interesting for you to talk about this poem because it has a great meaning. It had a great meaning when Dario wrote it, and it also has a great meaning because of your adaptation. Just give us the idea of what the poem's about.
I think what I'll do in this sense is I'll read the excerpt from my essay that's about my father and this poem, which will contextualize for your audiences why this poem is so dear to me.
Excellent.
In the months after my mother's death in January of 1997, I paid my father two visits up in Corning, each lasting 10 days. One evening, during the first visit, while strolling down the main drag on our way to Safeway, the subject of poetry came up, and he began to tell me about his favorite Rubén Darío poem, Los Motivos del Lobo. Mm-hmm. I didn't know the poem, and so listened intently as my father paraphrased the story from St. Francis of Assisi's life as depicted by Darío, how he tamed the wolf that had been terrorizing an Italian village, how the wolf lapsed back to being a wild animal, how St. Francis, sad at this turn of events, began to say the Our Father to end the poem. When I returned to Spain that June, I tracked the poem down and marveled at it, admiring how Darío had taken a well-known, popular, perhaps even sentimental myth and complicated it, making it more nuanced, problematic. The poem became a kind of metaphor for those 20 days I spent with my father in the wake of my mother's death. 20 years later, it's still a poem I immediately associate with him. Increasingly, I've come to think of it as his gift to me, my inheritance.
So in one sentence, just tell us what happens in that poem.
Well, the wolf goes back to his old ways, and St. Francis castigates him and basically gives him a tongue lashing, and the wolf pushes back and says, more or less, I was fine, but people began to mistreat me. And I saw how humans treat each other. And so I went back to being a wolf. Mm-hmm. And St. Francis is just devastated.
And you call it the loss of innocence.
Yes, it's in some ways, there is a loss of innocence. And I simply call my version of it, The Man and the Wolf.
What interests me so much about this is this started, as many things do, as a folk tale. And then Dario transmits it into poetry, and then Aragon takes it one more level. And so I just see the great course of history with this one piece. It is so interesting to watch from something that might have been oral in Nicaragua originally. Yes, but it is also important to me because I am very interested in your relationship with your father. And I have to say that of the last five male poets I have talked to, each one is always discovering his father, the father in literature. Just tell us a little bit about why he permeates this work so profoundly.
Well, like anything, it's a very personal story in which, I grew up, he, as I mentioned in the prose poem, that I have in the book called Glorias. He left our home shortly before I was born. And so he was a presence. His absence was palpable. Mm. And after our mother passed away, after my mother passed away, we reconnected with him. Mm. And so I allude to that in
yes.
the essay.
The love is there, though. Interesting. The love never expired through all those years, and it was rekindled. And there's a great deal of respect for him and curiosity still, I think, still finding him in yourself. You have a picture, one poem about looking into the mirror and saying, oh, am I my father?
Yes.
Well, let's hear more poetry of your own in this book, After Ruben. And this is Francisco Aragon. And it is a book that is going to make a lot of people know a lot of things they never knew before.
Sure. I'll share with you the last poem in the collection before the essay. And it's a poem that's dedicated to another poet who was in the DC area for a number of years, Carmen Calatayud. And this poem is called simply Creed. I soared across the sky to peer down at you all, each flap bringing me closer, your idea of heaven. No, I don't believe. My prayer is a sheet of ice scrutinized by unforgiving heat. Now my words are air. Without remorse, I compose, hold you inside me. Saints are sliced in four. I sing the rhythm of their days. Spirit endures, soft as a kiss, calling us to chorus, to convene antepasados en el desierto, to swallow what they teach.
And this is a chorus of voices, and that is the voice of Francisco Aragon. The program is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The series is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. We want to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Rivata Foundation of the Logan family and the Sinipit Fund, with support from Avide Shashani. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.